B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. As always, during the COVID-19 crisis, I hope this podcast finds you all safe, healthy, and playing some golf. Speaking of golf, wow. What the last couple of days. First, we were hopeful for fans returning to golf at next week's Memorial. Nope. Coronaed. Then we find out the Ryder Cup will not happen this year, again because of the lack of assurance that fans could be on site for the ultimate fan event. So in other words, coronaed. So the Ryder Cup is postponed until 2021. That means the President's Cup, scheduled for next year here at Quail Hollow, is pushed to 2022. But that also means that the Wells Fargo Championship will be returning to Charlotte next year instead of going to the D.C. area. We'll talk with Wells Fargo Championship Tournament Director Gary Soba about these developments and more. Also, the last time the Ryder Cup was postponed, well, it was after the events of 9/11 in 2001. The captain of that team, World Golf Hall of Famer Curtis Strange. We'll get his thoughts on this latest postponement and Fox Sports, his latest broadcasting protocol, walking away from the U.S. Open. So we got lots to cover, and let's get started with Wells Fargo Championship Tournament Director Gary Soba. Well, let's get started with the most important announcement in golf for Charlotte that came this week, and that is, of course, that my media team gets to defend its title for the third consecutive year next year when we thought we were going to have to take a year off. I mean, after all this, what the world's been waiting on, right?
Well, I don't think it's any longer a traveling trophy. It just kind of resides at your office or house. We may have to change the rules. You bring a stacked team. Mike Solarte wants to play a full 18 holes.
Oh, I'll do that. We can do 18. It's fine by me. So, Gary, you know, I've been off and on teasing you with asking this question for, I don't know, 2 months or so, and you're always so great at evading things. So let's back up, because you're good at telling me things after the fact. So let's back up. It's been 1 or 2 months ago that I first read stories in The Guardian about a possible, and at that point they were already reporting it as happening, a postponement of the Ryder Cup. The PGA Tour, the PGA of America, the RNA, no one makes announcements until they have every domino already in place. At what point were you contacted about the possibility of the tournament moving back to Quail Hollow because of a postponement of the Ryder Cup and therefore a moving of the President's Cup? How far back did you get contacted?
Oh, it's been 10 days, 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Recent.
Yeah, I don't think any of this comes as a surprise. I think when the rumors started roughly 3 months ago, the Ryder Cup rumors started early on. And, you know, when the Guardian started reporting that, and that's probably been a month ago, that, you know, there's smoke there. And they're talking to somebody that's in the know. So I think for the better part of you know, a month to 2 months prior to now, we start sensing that there was a chance that the Ryder Cup wouldn't be played, knowing that's the first domino to fall, moving that to 21. But, you know, then the question is, would there be two events in 21? And the tour told us that didn't make any sense.
No.
You would not play the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup in the same year. It's also an Olympic year. So, you know, you just literally, the sheer number of weeks prohibits that. But when the Ryder Cup goes there, you knew the President's Cup bounces back to 22, and then that brings us back here, and we're elated to be back here next spring.
Yeah, and you know, in a way, it sort of gets the golf world back on its axis because of 9/11 in 01, we had to move the Ryder Cup off of its normal year, so we're kind of getting things back to where they always were supposed to be. Gary Soba is the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest Taking Dead Aim. So we're back at Quail Hollow. The conversations between you guys and up in, you know, is it technically in Maryland? Is that where TPC Avenel is? Where,
okay,
Maryland. How did those go? And did they understand the situation? Everybody's cool just moving back a year? Or was there some wrangling going on?
Well, the nice thing about it's a TPC Potomac, it's owned by the tour. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we're at that golf course. But, Charlie, I had probably made six trips to D.C., We had an advisory board of 12 people. We'd had a kickoff event in January before all this went down. We had several clients already on board, and then obviously COVID hit in March, and they've been very good about it. It has not been a massive switch for them. You know, one of the things we had a little curveball is that after we announced we were going up there, the tour has taken a playoff event there next fall to Caves Valley. So fortunately, that now will not be in the same year, and then we moved to 22. What is the same year up there is, I believe it's the Women's PGA Congressional will be about 6 weeks later. And if you know the geography, Potomac and Congressional are only about a mile apart.
Yeah.
So while we won't have the PGA Tour to conflict up there, we do have a little competition with the LPGA Tour.
Well, let's talk about the benefits of this. I hate to say benefits because we hate that any of this had to happen. But the benefits of this happening and for the city of Charlotte. I know that it was heartbreaking for you guys to not have the tournament this year on a lot of levels, but one of the biggest levels was this is such a huge charity event for so many people and organizations in and around the Charlotte area, and having to cancel that, although you made some generous donations, I'm not saying you didn't, it was nowhere near what it normally is if we have the tournament, and if we would have not had it again next year, that would have been 2 years without the charitable dollars being raised. So I know you're happy about being able to get the charity aspect of the Wells Fargo Championship back on track in 21.
And there's no question about that. This event drives $1.5 to $2 million to local charities every year. That's significant dollars. And certain charities, I'm not to say expect it, but they've come to rely on it because we've been able to produce that forever. And this year, instead of giving away $1.5 to $2 million, we were still forced to give away about $500,000 to charity, which is significant, but certainly not comparatively to what we have done in previous years. I can tell you yesterday, talking to a number of our ambassadors, talking to our patrons, and I probably talked to 40 corporate partners, people are excited it's back. They genuinely love this event. You know that. I talked to multiple media members who love this event. And, you know, let's hope this post-COVID is sooner than this. But, you know, who knows? This could be the first event people are able to get out and entertain, you know. So, you know, the protocol is still something we don't know. Certainly, you know, busing and the food service, whether it's concessions or retail or catering, all those type things. Those are things that we want to have a world-class experience, but it could look different slightly than what we've historically known the Wells Fargo Championship to look like.
Thank you for bringing that up. Gary Sobas, the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. I was going to ask you about those aspects, the infrastructure and all the little ancillary things that go along with this tournament. You can, for right now, start planning as if, okay, it's going to be a normal event. You know, I always say prepare for the worst, but expect the best. So, you know, you can plan on it being a normal event, but in the back of your head, you're also planning on contingencies. If it's this, if it's we can only do this, if we can get 75%, 50%, you know, all these different aspects. What is sort of the drop dead date as far as setting up infrastructure in terms of stands and concessions for patrons for the Wells Fargo Championship or not? Or would you go ahead with it, and if they're empty, they're empty?
Well, I'm hopeful to be optimistic we'll have fans. You know, our typical build starts roughly at the end of February, roughly two months in advance of the tournament. So, you know, I think when you ask a drop-dead date, you know, our build will start, I would guess, sometime in March. We're going to have to get a really good idea of exactly, you know, what does it look and feel like? Are the closed air-conditioned structures, do they need to be open air? Do we need to enlarge the space? Is there more platforms? Do we need to have more platforms that provide social distancing? Fortunately, you know, when the event started the first of the year, we have roughly probably 16 tournaments before ours, so we can take best practices. Although each region community has a different set of guidelines, you know, I think they'll be more uniform after the first of the year, that we'll get a feel for what we can and can't do.
Obviously, you won't be using the rerouting system that they're using for the President's Cup, because they're doing that just to make sure that the Green Mile comes into play. But were there things that the PGA of America had planned to do as far as where they were going to have concessions and where they were going to have some things set up that you guys are going to be able to benefit from in the 2021 Wells Fargo Championship?
Well, a couple things. I think the Wells Fargo Championship had been run so well. I think they copied a lot of things the Wells had done historically. I do think with the new driving range and the new learning center there, Right when you come in, there's a new entrance.
Yep.
So when fans, there's going to be a new drop-off, new entrance. It looks fantastic. How they come right by the driving range, but there's a new putting green area, a new short game area. So that area is going to look slightly different as it relates to how we set up our concession stands and viewing. But for the most part, it will mirror what we've historically done in the past. We had a big craft beer area, craft beer zone this past year. Will we be able to do that next year? It's a good question. And, you know, it's one of those things we'll have to look at the expense side of the equation pretty hard. You know, we typically are looking at top-line revenue, and our tournament, fortunately, with big crowds, we've never had to really worry. We can put on the best tournament possible. I think the top-line revenue will still be there. It's just, you know, we probably have to look at the expenses a little more closely this year.
Mr. Harris, excited about having the Wells Fargo Championship back next year, or is he disappointed that the President's Cup has been postponed a year?
I have not spoken to him in the last 24 hours, but Johnny's always excited. He understands that he's flexible.
Asking if Johnny's excited about having a golf tournament is like asking Santa if he's excited about Christmas.
He's fantastic, and he understands. And, you know, what I think is very unique is all the different governing bodies working so closely together and working well together just to make the, you know, the dominoes. There's a lot of dominoes that come into play there, you know, from TV contracts on down. So I think, you know, he's so fired up to have annual golf and major golf here that you know, he's willing to be flexible in those things.
Well, Bud, I know I speak for literally thousands of people in the area. This is the number one event that Charlotte has now on an annual basis in terms of numbers. No, it's fact. Numbers of people and just the hospitality and the vibe and how every – it's where we put our best foot forward. There's no question about it. And there was a huge hole, I think, in the life, and not to mention the economy of this town without the Wells Fargo Championship this last year. And so I, for one, if we can't have the President's Cup next year, I am stoked that the Wells Fargo Championship is coming back, and I know that you're happy about it, too.
You and I both are, absolutely, and we look forward to Media Day. We look forward to hosting you out there, and I look forward to a lot more conversations with you.
That's the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, our friend Gary Soba. You know, the last time the Ryder Cup was postponed, the American captain was Curtis Strange. And up next, he'll take dead aim at this latest moving of the event and more, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Curtis Strange is a World Golf Hall of Famer, one of only two men since the 1950s to win back-to-back U.S. Opens. And in 2001, he was the American Ryder Cup team captain. And that's the last time that the Ryder Cup was postponed. I am so jealous of you, by the way, in that you have, look, I have the patience of a gnat everywhere but on the golf course. I can play behind foursomes and take 6-hour rounds of golf, and although it'll piss me off, I'm still okay. But I cannot go fishing. I do not have the patience for it. It makes me crazy. And somehow, you've been able to transition into this love of fishing. And not only that, you're pulling like whales out of the water. I am so jealous of you.
You know, I have fished. When I first got on tour, Bill Rogers and Bruce Liske took me in the parking lot in 1977 at Inverary, Fort Lauderdale one night to show me how to cast. And it's cost me a lot of money since that night, okay? Just saying that. And I fell in love with it immediately, and I never hunted till I met my wife, because I grew up as an athlete, and fell in love with that. So it gave me an out. What I'm saying, Charlie, gave me an out for when I went home and during the winter months when we didn't have all this off-season stuff back in the day.
Now, I've met Sarah. She's a lovely woman, but I don't care how lovely a woman is. I'm not going anywhere with my wife when she's got a gun in her hand.
Well, I don't let her have a gun. That's the key. You know, You know, she's got a look that is as painful as a gun, okay? Let's just put it like that, like they all do.
Super.
She didn't have to say anything.
Super. I thought about you this week when the Ryder Cup was postponed. You and I have talked on a number of occasions about when the Ryder Cup was postponed, when you were the captain. And so I guess my first question is, have you reached out or sent a message to Captain Stricker?
I actually did this morning. I read the official announcement yesterday, and I didn't get a chance yesterday, but I called him this morning, didn't get him, but just wanted to talk to him about it and say it'll be okay and just take a break from it, go play some golf and pick it up, in 8 or 10 months. And that's all you can do.
You know,
the team will not change more than likely if they handle it the same way we handled ours.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was the same. I had the same year on my uniforms. I didn't change it from 2001 to 2002. And especially because of what happened, 9/11. But you just put it on hold. And I can't – people have no idea what it takes to delay that a year, because now you have to change the President's Cup back a year. And all the logistics of that happening, from sponsors to ticket sales to the site. I mean, it's just an enormous movement to move it from one year to the next. But, you know, we had to do what we had to do, and I think it was a smart move to delay it a year. And I just hope that next year is better than this year.
Oh, yeah, it has to be. You know, I was thinking the parallels, although the circumstances are both drastically different, the parallels are there, both of them, these you know, catastrophic once-in-a-lifetime events, both of them happening in relatively short time leading up to the Ryder Cup, and then decisions having to be made. Yours, I was trying to remember in our past conversations, how close did it actually come to you guys actually going through and playing the event in 01 as opposed to canceling it? What was the drop-dead date?
Well, we were supposed to leave in about 2 weeks, so the drop-dead date was that day or the next day.
Wow.
9/11 happened on Tuesday. I was in Colorado Springs doing an outing. I started driving back to Williamsburg, Virginia on Wednesday morning. And during that Wednesday and Thursday day that it took me to get home, by Thursday they had already moved it back a year, because we had to move and because we had to make a decision, because things were, as you know, right before the tournament, things are really churning up. And you have to remember, we didn't know if we were going to hit again. We didn't know what was happening. We didn't know if the world was going to end, so to speak. And so we just made the right decision. And with all the heads of state, meaning the Tim Finchin, the commissioner, to the head of the PGA of America, to all the players, and then their side as well over in Europe, they all agreed that it had to be delayed a year. But we didn't. It didn't go much farther than 2 days.
World Golf Hall of Famer and former Ryder Cup captain Curtis Strange, our guest taking Dead Aim. With what's been going on with the PGA Tour, with no fans, and it has sort of an odd look on TV when you see the overhead shots and shots of the green, but otherwise the play's about the same. And I was thinking, you know, the PGA Championship's going to be played without fans. I don't think that will bother me. The U.S. Open without fans, I don't think that would bother me. The two events that I thought of that if you couldn't have fans or patrons, that would really bother me. I can't imagine, having lived and worked in Augusta, being on the grounds at Augusta National without the roars. And I really can't imagine the Ryder Cup without fans. What are your thoughts on just not just the logistics of playing it, but you know, it looks like they canceled it just because they couldn't have fans. Do you think the Ryder Cup is an event that has to have fans?
Well, if there's ever an event, and remember that the Ryder Cup's not a championship like these others we're talking about. It is the greatest event in golf. I don't know why. No, they didn't do it because of COVID.
Yeah.
But the Ryder Cup without fans would be hard to envision for me, because the fans can make a difference there, whereas other events, they really don't make a difference in who wins and who loses. But in that case, they have a little bit to do with it, especially on home soil. It is the ultimate home court advantage in sport, as far as I'm concerned. So, but they did it because, let's think about this. people from certain parts of Europe aren't allowed in the U.S. They'd have to come here and isolate for 2 weeks if they're even allowed in, if they can get in. I don't know all the particulars of that, but that puts a cramp in their style of their golf playing tour over there. We coming from hot spots to Wisconsin, some of our players probably would have to quarantine once they got it. Just, it's a logistical nightmare. And so because of COVID and because of even the players, you know, now if you get them together, they can't. The part of the fun is behind the locker room doors of the Roddick. Part of the fun, most of the fun is behind locker room doors, getting to know and have fun with your players and their spouses. So it was the right thing to do. But I will add one more event that I think is going to be tough without fans, and that is the U.S. Open in New York. U.S. Open somewhere else, I might give you a little nod.
But New York.
In New York, the fans are beautiful. As long as they're not getting on my rear end. Okay? They're beautiful there.
Curtis Strange, former Ryder Cup captain and World Golf Hall of Famer, our guest taking Dead Aim. One of the things that postponing the Ryder Cup from 01 to 02 did, because of the event that precipitated it, it was thought that it might reset things. And I know that the event itself was far less confrontational, shall we say, in 02 than it probably would have been. But since then, we've sort of digressed just back to where we were before. Do you think that perhaps because of the events surrounding this postponement that we might be able to reset it and it might be a little less contentious going forward, or it just is what it is?
Probably not. It is what it is. Yeah. In 2002, because of 9/11, you know, it wasn't just U.S., it was U.S. and the world came together. Most of the world came together. And especially in Europe, especially our counterparts over in Europe and the Ryder Cup organization. And it was wonderful. You got to remember, we were coming off 1999, where it got very contentious on the last couple of holes with us running on the green. And without alienating all of my American friends, you know, their fans, they root hard for their team, but they more likely than us behave. We have caused some issues over the years. Our fans crossed the line, but once again, that's the Ryder Cup, but they were fantastic in 02. They rooted like hell for their own team, which is what they should have. But I must say, I didn't hear one cross word when I was in and out of the gallery for 5 days over there.
Get you out of here on this. I'd be remiss if I didn't say, first off, I hate that you're not going to be on the ground at Fox covering the U.S. Open. I've probably said this to you privately, but I'll say it publicly. To me, in my lifetime, you are, when I think U.S. Open golfers, I admire what you did in the playoff at Brookline. I admire what you did the next year at Oak Hill so much. You've always been sort of the face and the voice of the U.S. Open for me. I loved the fact that Hogan never said boo to you about being a back-to-back U.S. Open champion, but you were the first person to say something to Brooks Koepka. That just showed me the class act that you are. And I loved you on the grounds for Fox. As good as you were in the booth all those years at ESPN, there was something about having someone with your gravitas and your experience on the course with the last group at the U.S. Open that let me know, okay, this is real and this is what's going on. So personally, I wanted to say how much I hate the fact that Fox doesn't have it, for the simple reason that I enjoy you being a part of the U.S. Open so much.
Well, Charlie, that's one of the nicest things I've ever had said to me, and I really appreciate it because we do work hard, and I've been at this for 23 years, and I was talking to Terry Gannon the other day about what my future might look like, and he just said, "Hey, you've done all the positions. You know, that's what you bring to another team is that you can do. You've done all the positions, so you have a lot of options. I don't know if I have options or not as far as another team, but doing the U.S. Open has been a dream for me. After playing one of the great times, not really honor, but great days of my life was being there with Brooks Koepka when he won back to back, and I was in his group, and I was the last. You know, as long as Brooks Koepka is not the last living back to back, I'm still good with it. Okay. You know what? I'm really gonna get aggravated when he's the last living. But I really had a ball calling, and I tried to do my very best, and I tried to give him all the credit in the world. And I told them, short story, when we had our meeting, production meeting that morning, I said, guys, if Brooks gets ready to win, I do not want to mention my name one time, okay? This is about Brooks, and it's not about me. So it looks like Brooks is getting ready to take control, and Azinger says to the world, well, Curtis, it's about time to talk about the last back-to-back guy to do this. What's it feel like? And I loved him for it, but he did it in the proper way and place, and I got emotional, as I did when he finished. And I don't know why, but it was great to be able to reminisce just for a second while Brooks was getting ready to win back-to-back.
Well, man, I hate you're not going to be there. Did you enjoy being on the call on the ground more or less than you did in the booth? And I say that because I would think in the heat of the moment, when you're there with that last group, even though you're not the one making the shots, there's got to be that almost adrenaline rush that you would get as a player because you're there experiencing with them.
Well, you get an adrenaline rush doing any sporting event, I think, if you're a former athlete, because you know what's going on and you get fired up. You know, when I was last year, before I answer your question, last year I'm getting ready to go off with Gary Woodland, last group, and Brooks Koepka's already birdied two of the first three, so I'm saying this is going to be special today to myself, and I have to be on point and do my very best, and it shut up at times. And I was so fired up, I have to slow down. I have to make sure I don't talk too much in the first couple holes until we get in the flow of things. So I get fired up. And then I love being on the ground, Charlie. I absolutely love it. Especially at a U.S. Open. Okay, it's our national championship. It's the championship that all kids dream about, along with the Masters, but it's our national championship. So I have had an absolute ball down there. Following the greats of the game, watching them play, and trying to do them justice and trying to bring the viewer closer to what this guy might be feeling, thinking, or reacting to.
I know I'm biased, but to me, Curtis Strange is the ultimate United States Open competitor, as well as being a brilliant and insightful golf broadcaster. I'd also like to thank Gary Soba, tournament director for the Wells Fargo Championship, for his time and insight this week. Want to remind you, keep up with us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Give us a like. Featured there now, always, the latest links to the latest articles on goings-on in and around the game. Weather-wise, hey, it's summertime. It's hot. You may be dodging some showers and thunderstorms here and there, but it just doesn't get better to get out, play some golf. All safe practices, as always. Put them in place. Tee it up. Let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here real soon, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.